Hey everyone, welcome to Commander and Coffee, the podcast where all creatures have vigilance and haste. My name is Y.
And I'm Cork.
Hey, what's up? It's Cypher.
So the topic of today is Shorakai Genesis Engine. Cork is going to be leading this discussion, but before we go into that, I'm going to mention today's coffee. It is a coffee that I made at 8 o'clock this morning in the middle of a campground. It is the Onyx Coffee Tanzanian blend. It's got a really cool body to it. It's got like fruity notes, black tea notes. We all drank it black. It wasn't my call, but everyone enjoyed it. So that's the coffee, and now we'll go into the deck. Lead us off, Cork.
All right, so Shorakai here. For those of you that don't know, Shorakai Genesis Engine is 2 white-blue for an 8/8 legendary artifact creature vehicle. artifact vehicle. It has the ability of 1 and tap it to draw 2 cards, then discard a card. And then you create a 1/1 colorless pilot creature token with this creature crews vehicles as though its power was 2 more, and it has an ability of crew 8. But I'm going to tell you now, it's not what we're using it for. We're not crewing this bad boy. This mech is going to stay exactly as it is. So this was one of my favorite creatures when it came out in the Kamigawa set, when in the Commander set. I built it quite a few different ways until I finally settled on the list that I'm going off of now, which is actually a polymorph list, because you could leverage the pilots that you get from Shorakai as the polymorph target to then polymorph into one of the Tyrants and you go from there. The other unique thing that I noticed with Shorakai is, it's one of the biggest things that blue-white was always missing, is card draw in the command zone. Arbiter was always good because it lessened the cost of things. Lavinia, again, huge stacks piece. But it was always seeming missing that card draw there.
And a way to close out the game.
Yeah, and also a way to close out the game with those two, yeah. So the biggest draw to me for Shorakai was it could be a control deck while leveraging cards like Humility and certain removal. And like I said, the primary game plan was to polymorph into one of the Tyrants, whether it be Hullbreaker Horror or Tidespout Tyrant, and then finish up with with one of those combos or an Isochron Scepter Dramatic Reversal combo.
So what are some things that like you think this deck does the best, better than the other blue-white decks, other than just having that game-winning text on it?
So the biggest thing is it's amazing card draw in the command zone. Draw 2, ditch 1, like, phenomenal. Another big thing is one of my favorite cards, Humility, and it's unaffected by it because it's an artifact. It's not a creature. And as the game progresses, because you get those pilots, because you get those 2 cards, you get to see more cards than your opponents, and you get incremental advantage as the game goes on. And the other really cool thing is you have to run those white, blue-white silver bullets that just, you know, tend to stop people out of nowhere.
I think this commander really seems to kind of check all the boxes for you, Cork. When I saw you playing it, even from the very start, because you've been on this deck, you've been testing it for a little bit now. You took it to at least one event, right? You took it to the 2-headed event, a little bit different context, but you did... I feel that you have a lot of success because it's such a unique property of a commander in that it's a non-creature. It does the stacksy elements and the control elements that you seem to like a lot. And I feel like you like Planeswalker commanders, you just don't like the ones that are currently out. So this kind of seems to scratch that itch for you, in my opinion.
Yeah, it really does. It's having that you know, that uniqueness in the command zone, and it fills the role of the stacks, but it also harkens back to the days when I first started playing Magic and learning how to play, and a lot of you guys actually paired me up and had me play with Esper control and Jeskai control and, you know, blue-white spirits control. Like, so this hits all my, like, nostalgic feels too, which I think is really cool for me. A couple things that I don't like about it, you know, I always say, what's your biggest fear? with the deck, like what's the deck's biggest fear, and 100% the biggest fear in this deck is Null Rod effects.
Makes sense.
Collector Oof, Null Rod, anything that prevents me from using my artifacts, because unfortunately it's blue-white, it's going to be using a lot of artifacts. Another thing that's actually kind of scary for it is actually Grafdigger's Cage, because it shuts off the polymorph lines. It also takes a bit for Shorokai here to get some legs, but
Boo.
Boo.
Yeah, I'll take that one. I deserve that one. But what I mean by that is it's not a turn one, turn two combo deck. Like, you, when you're playing this deck, you're looking to win. You're just looking to draw the game out to turn five, turn six, you know, or even have the game locked down by turn four, you know. If you can't get there, if there's a deck that's going to be faster than that, it's going to be, you know, you're going to be in a little bit of trouble, but you actually get to run a lot of counter spells and removal packages that really help you get to that long game.
And that's kind of like one of the classic stacks curses, isn't it? You have a deck that's coming in like very fast and very hard, breaking down your house while you're trying to set up all your pieces. So that's nothing new. And I feel like when you do get set up, Shorokai has a good way to leverage those symmetric effects.
Yeah, it also seems to play better into other people's stacks decks, which I've noticed in a lot of games that I played. People are playing like roll law effects, and I'm just sitting there going, yeah, I'm just going to make as many pilots and just beat you down with pilots, because I only need to cast one spell. That's fine by me. Yeah, it shuts off the, you know, my tyrant lines, but I'm okay with that, or even my Icecron Scepter lines, but again, I'm totally okay with that, because I'll just keep making pilots.
So the funny thing with this deck that you guys have mentioned, that I don't know if it's just for verbiage or if I just disagree with it, I don't look at Shorokai as a stacks deck. There's not a lot of, like, stacks elements in here. It definitely just feels like a blue-white control deck with a like your standard big finisher in the form of your Hullbreaker Horror and your Tide Spout, but instead of playing the old school way of trying to get you know what, 7 or 8 mana, you're just polymorphing that into play as quickly as you can.
Yeah, it's, in my opinion, it's a different form of stacks. Control is, you know, it really stacks people out. It's not leveraging a Thorn of Amethyst or a Winter Orb or something like that. It's leveraging the 3 counter spells that I have, or a Swords of Plowshares, or a Board Wipe, or something like that, to kind of really gain incremental advantage over the top of my opponents. Unlike a stacks deck that has to be actively putting the stacks piece down, going, yeah, I'm going to sit here and hopefully that Thorn of Amethyst really shuts you down, or Trinisphere, but like, in my opinion, this plays better with stacks decks.
Yeah, because this deck is way more reactive than it is proactive, right? And in the stacks deck, you're trying to slam a Rule of Law, you're trying to slam a tax effect, something to that effect. In this deck, you just kind of want to get to Shorokai as quickly as you can, and then just sit and wait, and then react to the table, either by counter spells or through just continuing to just turn through your deck with Shorokai activations to find your combo, which I think is really cool. So this is definitely one of the, in my opinion, the stronger control decks that's existed. I know we've seen other control decks in the form of like Curious Control and Rashmi do its thing, but the card advantage that this deck can generate is actually pretty dope, and I do like seeing that, seeing in games like that where that's happening, where you can just kind of react as opposed to having to play at sorcery speed.
I also feel that in CDH as a whole, the lines between combo and control and stacks are a little bit more blurred than most other formats. Just in the case that, like, all the decks, if you're in blue and black, you're pretty much on the Thoracle combo. I think the biggest question is, like, choice of commander and when you are choosing to deploy certain threats. If you're trying for your commander fast early in the game, or you're doing it later in the game, when you're deploying your counter spells and what you're countering. So I feel like, you know, if you've seen enough decks in the database, there's so much overlap, so much similarity. And I think Shorokai is a good example of a lot of the cards are the same for blue-white decks, but the way Shorokai deploys them and what you're targeting, I feel, is quite a bit different than if you're playing something like a Grand Arbiter deck.
That's what I see. Like the neat thing, which to touch on your point that I saw is like, it's like, you know, in your typical, like, you know, your Turbo Grixis shells or your blue black X shells, your Timnacron piles, what have you, your counter spells are proactive first, reactive second. You really like to use those to protect your combo and when you're going for your win. Whereas I think in Shorkai, it's a little reversed, right? You're more or less stopping other people from winning, drawing some cards, gaining your card advantage, engines rolling, and then get to the point where you're like, all right, cool. Now that everyone's kind of, you know, blown their load, done their thing, it's all done. Now I'm just going to go ahead and cast this polymorph and go for the win here, which I think is really cool and a little different style of play.
Yeah, because Shorokai does help you keep your hand full throughout the game at any time you want to invest the mana into it.
Yeah, priority number one is always getting Shorokai down or Humility, if it really boils down to it. Just depends on what else is at the table. We'll get into that a little later. So let me go into detail on some of the combos here. Of course, you have naturally the Polymorph lines, which is Polymorph or Proteus Staff into whether it be Tidespout Tyrant or Hullbreaker Whore. Something unique that I found in Shorokai, as opposed to like Urza Polymorph, is I run both Tyrants. A lot of like the Urza lines, they came to the conclusion that one Tyrant, Tyrant or Whore, which mostly Horror is the better one in that aspect, but I'm running both. Which is, it worked better for me. It's a personal choice because of another one of my combos in here, which we're going to get into in a little bit too, but it felt better because I didn't really care if I drew one, because the thing is, I got enough mana where I could cast them at any time because I'm making that game last 6, 7, 8 turns. I always want it to have mana. With that Tyrant loop, you obviously go with a mana positive rock, casting, looping them between themselves, and then once you get infinite mana, you start looping Shorokai into that, and then drawing your deck until you get to Blind Obedience, which then with Blind Obedience, using its extort trigger, you start looping the mana positive rocks and extorting it to kill the table.
So to clarify, in order to enact this polymorph line, Tidespout Tyrant and Hullbreaker Horror can be the only two creatures in your deck, correct?
Correct.
And then you're using the pilot tokens generated off of Shorokai in order to achieve that success.
Correct.
Neat. So how do you feel about how does you feel about having that deck building restriction of not being able to play some of the more intricate creatures into the deck list?
Every time, multiple times, I have wanted to slam in creatures such as like Ledger Shredder or Aven Mind Sensor multiple times over, or even Spell Seekers. I'm like, man, this will be great. This will help me get to my... Oh, I can't do that because, you know, creature. So it was neat in that aspect, but then you found neat little other creatures or other things that function as a creature. So one of my favorite cards that I found from the same deck, actually, is Imposter Mech. And what Imposter Mech does is it's one in a blue, and you may have Imposter Mech enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature an opponent controls, except it's a vehicle artifact with Crew 3 and loses all their card types, and it has the Crew 3 ability. What's really cool with that is, hey, you have a Seedborn on your side of the field? Cool, I'm going to Imposter Mech make a copy of that Seedborn, and then I'm going to kill your Seedborn. Or a Thrasios, or any type of value creature, because now I basically have an artifact with that ability of, you know, Seaborn, of Thrasios, of opposition agent. Literally anything.
And you have a commander that can possibly keep pace with a Seaborn deck.
Exactly, because of Shorokai's ability is a tap ability, having a Seaborn Muse or some type of untapper is phenomenal, because you just get so much more card advantage.
And looking at your list, it does look like, as a whole, it's good that you don't have creatures, because I feel that you have a good number of unique cards, and just having those cuts in the creature base allows you to play a lot more other things. Like, I'm looking at your removal suite, which looks like we're about to touch on that. But yeah, just having like room for more board wipes and more unique interaction pieces and more stacks pieces, like your humilities, I think that cutting creatures for the polymorph option allows you to play to your other routes as well with your deck.
Yeah, it definitely lets me kind of shore up my other abilities with Shorokai.
That one was very good. Good job.
That one was better.
Thanks. another thing that we have is, like, why I mentioned humility. Shorokai is not affected by humility, so just humility beats. Sometimes it gets there. People don't know how to deal with humility. I've played multiple games where they just went, yeah, humility's fine, and I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to keep pumping out creatures, pilots, and swinging into you, and you're eventually going to have to block them. Oh, you know, you're blocking, and I'm gaining more advantage, because I don't care if my creatures die.
I also feel like humility is one of those cards that allows your other play patterns to get a lot better, because I feel like when you have a humility in play, the things that you're interacting with as far as counter magic is concerned is laser focused. At that point where there's a humility in play, you're really just trying to counter a force of vigor or a nature's claim, because Rexage doesn't deal with it. I mean, Neoform doesn't really deal with it. There's a lot of cards that are no longer a threat to you. It really lets you pick and choose your battles much more cleanly after that.
Yeah, it definitely lets me kind of sit there and go, okay, now I can focus and not have to worry about the creature aspects, and I can focus on the non-creatures, which majority is how people deal with them, with humility and stuff like that. We have the tried and true Ice Crown Scepter Dramatic Reversal combo. Falls along the same lines with the polymorph lines. You generate infinite mana, you untap Shorokai a bunch, draw into Blind Obedience, cast Blind Obedience, and Blind Obedience X toward everybody. There's also two neat interactions. I am running Copy Artifact in the list, so you could do Copy Artifact and Swan Song to make infinite swans. If for some reason your Blind Obedience is gone, you can also do a Build Your Own Dramatic Reversal if for some reason something weird happened where your Icecrown Scepter imprinted a Narset's Reversal. And what you do is you cast Dramatic Reversal, Narset's Reversal your Dramatic Reversal, and keep repeating. Probably my final and favorite combo in the deck, mainly because of the way that I figured it out, is the Intuition line involving Dermotaxi, Savine's Reclamation, and whether it be Tidespout Tyrant or Hull Breacher. Hull Breacher is obviously the better one here, but, you know, here we are. I actually, the night before the one tournament I went to out in New York, I took a nap, and I had a dream that I literally cast this thing. I cast this combo. It was not in my deck at all. And I woke up, and I called up Y, and I called up Cypher, and I said, hey, I'm running this. This is what I'm doing. Here's what it does, because Dermotaxi, when it enters the battlefield, it has the imprint trigger. As it enters the battlefield, exile a creature card from your graveyard, and then you can tap two untapped creatures you control until the end of turn. Dermotaxi becomes a copy of the exiled card, accesses a vehicle artifact in addition to its other types. So it literally just becomes a copy of the Tyrant or the Hull Breacher. And then you proceed to do the polymorph lines with the looping of the mana positive rock and then Shorokai, and then you're off to the races.
Yeah, it's always fun to discover another intuition pile. It's never not satisfying.
So in terms of combo order, would you say polymorph's kind of your initial game plan, and then which combo do we typically fall back on next? Is it typically ISO Rev, or where are we going if we're not polymorphing this game?
So it really depends on the table structure. If I'm having a stacks deck at the table, I'm usually going polymorph into humility. If I'm trying to go fast, this simple and cleanest way is polymorph and Icecrown Scepter. And then the humility is the backup. It really is table dependent, to be quite honest. Polymorph seems to be always the front runner because it's the quickest and easiest.
And I'm sure your opening hand can dictate a few things too. Like if you have a humility, you're probably just going to run it out and see if that sticks.
Absolutely, because humility becomes a need to answer threat. Speaking of threats, here's how we deal with them. That was a terrible segue, but I'll take it. We're going to talk a little bit about the removal that we have in here. You obviously have counterspells. You're in blue. Obviously, you have counterspells. One of the more unique counterspells that I get to run, though, being I'm under these restrictions, is Spell Snare, which is one blue mana, and you counter target spell with converted mana cost 2. So, hey, Tainted Pact, hey, Thassa's Oracle, hey, Underworld Breach, Dockside Extortionist, just straight up counter those. Doesn't matter, and the cool thing is it can't be deflecting swatted, which is why I really wanted to run it. I also get to run things like I mentioned before, Narciss Reversal, another cool one is Mindbreak Trap, but it's really the pretty much standard, you know, blue counterspells.
But going off that, I would say, like, it's standard blue counterspells plus 2 or +3, because like we mentioned before, you're not running those creature slots, so you have an expanded pool of all your other strengths.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not running counterspells like Hinder or Spell Crumple, but like I get to run neat things like Spell Snare or Narciss Reversal. Yeah. Probably my favorite reason that even attracted me to Shorokai was the fact that I get to run Board Wipes. I tried running a ton of Board Wipes. I tried running one Board Wipe. Finally, what I settled on was 3. Supreme Verdict. What's great about destroying all creatures is a lot of the decks and a lot of the meta that I've noticed seems to go towards creature-based. Decks like Winota, Yuriko, anything that runs, any type of farm deck, seems to run around creatures. And if you get rid of their creatures, well, they are super on the back foot, and they can't do much at all. They have to rebuild, and they have to spend time to rebuild. Meanwhile, you're still built, which means that puts you effectively 2 turns ahead, or more, depending on how developed they were.
If you make 2 people rebuild at sorcery speed for something like 5 mana apiece, then you have time to, if you are behind on your commander, you can deploy your commander in that opening. You can be holding up counter magic in that opening. You can be deploying a humility after they tap out to recast. I feel like you get the door open very wide for you at that point. And very few people are playing around board wipes in this day and age. Shorokai is one of the few, I would say, like prominent new decks that is on the board wipe strategy. I think Toxic Deluge has kind of fallen out of favor in a general sense. I mean, there are still decks that play it, but at least locally, there's fewer Toxic Deluge decks. We're leaning more toward fast combo. If you're running more toward Adnaz, you're not really thinking about it. And I think we could be, you know, possibly looping back around to having a really good merit to Toxic Deluge, Fire Covenant. Obviously, in terms of Shorokai, those aren't in your colors, so like Supreme Verdict. You're also playing a very fun one, Vanquish the Horde. Do you want to mention that one quick?
Yeah, that's what I was going into next. Vanquish the Horde, it's 6 white-white, and this spell costs 1 less for each creature on the battlefield, and it just straight-up destroys all creatures. It's kind of equivalent to Blasphemous Act in red, except it's double white and costs 6. But the thing is, you don't really care about your creatures. Like, you just make more. And the cool thing is, being able to make more, they count towards your cost reduction on Vanquish the Horde. And sometimes people are like, oh yeah, he just has double white, it's cool. And you're like, alright, cool, I'm going to Vanquish the Horde. And you wipe the board, and you're like, alright, cool, I'm going to make another pilot and call it a day. Another card that we get to run in the lands, that's, I'm going to say, honorable mention board wipe, Tabernacle of Pendril Veil. You get to, it makes every creature have an upkeep cost of 1, and you're just like, yep, cool, my creatures die, my pilots die, that's okay. But somebody who has like a Timna or a Najeela or something like that, they're really going to sit there and really consider paying that extra 1, and that could make or break the turn or their game. One of the final board wipes that we have here is Cyclonic Rift. It's a pretty tried and true card that's been around for ages now. You know, it's bounce all your stuff at instant speed. Cool, great. The cool thing about that one is it gets rid of everything on your opponent's side and your stuff is not affected. That's the biggest thing with that. Then we go into some targeted removal. Swords to Plowshares, White Staple, Path to Exile. On the fringe, you know, but still pretty good because guess what? A lot of people don't run basics nowadays. But I'm looking at it in Najeela, I'm going, you're definitely not running the basic. Get that out of here. One of the unique ones is Resculpt, which lets me get rid of an artifact or a creature, which when we talked about earlier, one of my fears is Null Rod, and Null Rod effects, that deals with both Null Rod and also Collector Roof. So that's great for me. And then you have Winds of Rebuke, which is great because it just bounces an online permanent and everybody mills. So top deck tutors, don't have to worry about them anymore.
So one of the questions that I had in the removal suite, and I'm sure this was considered and why it's not being played, why the hold up on playing March of Otherworldly Light? Seems like that answers Null Rods, Collector Roofs, and other things that you're scared of.
So I tried it. I tested it multiple times. My biggest hold up for that is the amount of white permanents I'm actually running. White cards I'm actually running, I should say. It's not as many as you would think. It's only 9 cards. So, yes, I could dump a bunch of mana into there and do it that way. But it really if I'm paying 3 mana to remove a Null Rod or a Collector Oof, it's like, why? Like, if I would much rather be running the Sorcery Speed Prismatic Ending as opposed to that, just to deal the same effect. But the thing is also, all my white cards, I want them. Like, I don't want to pitch a Savines or an Angel's Grace or a Blind Obedience to March of Otherworldly Light. I'm like, okay, I'll just play around it for now. Or I could deal with it on the stack. Which, one of the ways to deal with it on the stack is, naturally, Counterspells. Wow, go figure, I'm in blue. I never would have guessed that one. Some other interesting things that I get to run, like I was talking, those Silver Bullets. Dress Down. And this is one of my favorite cards that's come out recently because it's a mini Humility kind of thing. It's 1 in a blue. It has Flash. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card, which it replaces itself, which is great. And it says, creatures lose all abilities. And then at the beginning of the end step, sacrifice Dress Down. So if someone's about to combo out with Thassa's Oracle, you go, cool, I'm going to Dress Down. It's great. And another card that kind of deals with Thassa's Oracle and other things like that is Angel's Grace.
That's an interesting include. Typically, you see that paired with, old school, but back in the day, you saw that always paired with Ad Nauseam to allow you to draw your deck and go for the win. So here, it's mainly just used as a protection effect against scary things.
Yeah, I use it more defensively. Same thing with Silence, actually. I could use it offensively when I'm trying to combo out, but a lot of times Silence would just end up as a, hey, you're about to combo out with Breach, cool, don't do that. Same thing with Angel's Grace. It's like, all right, cool, yeah, you can do your Breach lines, that's perfectly fine. You know, I'm just gonna, how about no?
I feel like the control aspect of Shorokai really opens up those options for Silence on a game-to-game basis, versus like, you're not doing it as last resort. It's fully on the table doing it defensively.
Yeah, and I run Time Twister in here to reset everything. If I use it defensively, and then later on I can use it offensively.
What really kind of interested me a lot about Angel's Grace overall was when you first mentioned it, I thought you were an insane person. But if you really think about it, there's a lot of effects and ways to win the game anymore that are library dependent, right? You know, Thassa's Oracle, Demonic Consultation, Underworld Breach into like Brain Freeze / Grinding Station loops and different things like that. So there actually is a little bit more of a prevalence to, you know, have that type of effect in your deck more so than I think. I'm still kind of on the fence on it personally, but overall, I think there's some merit there to having that card in your deck, and I think it's pretty cool. And it definitely has the gotcha moments, which is you know, clip worthy when they happen.
Yeah. Hashtag mom clip this. So speaking of mom, some of the things that mom used to do for us, she used to tutor us. And there's a lot of tutors in this deck. The most prominent tutors are the ones that tutor to the battlefield. Those are the most important tutors. So Word of Invention, Reshape, Polymorph and Proteus stuff. I technically consider them a tutor, Transmute Artifact. Those ones, because they tutor them right to the battlefield, are more important than the other ones, because they can just, okay, I'm going to do this and win the game. You know, I can, if I have Dramatic Reversal in my hand and I have a Word of Invention, I can go, cool, I'm going to Word of Invention for X equals 2, and then put an Icecrown Scepter, imprint Dramatic Reversal, proceed to win. Tezzeret's another one that does the exact same thing, Tezzeret the Seeker. And, you know, other neat, unique tutors is, because we don't have black and blue-white, obviously, so you get Transmute, like Muddle a Mixture, and Intuition, like I mentioned before, and Mystical Tutor and Lightning Tutor, they're all pretty much all right there, so.
So in this topic, there are actually two notable excludes I noticed that I wanted to kind of talk about really quick. The one of them, and it's in your maybe board, is the Personal Tutor. I'm personally really a big fan of the card. It gets you your Polymorph, which is, like you were saying, one of your main combos. And as your backup, like plan B for Personal Tutor, it also lets you get a Wrath of God, a board wipe effect. Do you want to talk about the, I don't know, if you've considered Personal Tutor a little bit more strongly lately?
So I did. I thought that it'd be halfway decent. I liked the idea of Personal Tutor. I just was more focused on not worrying about my own top deck tutors. It's the same reason I'm not a big fan of Imperial Seal. I just don't like it sitting there, because I have its sorcery speed. I do it on my turn. I literally have to broadcast what I get. I'm literally just going, hey guys, I'm going to turn one Personal Tutor. I'm going to put the Polymorph into my hand. Or onto the top of my library, not to my hand, I'm sorry. And I just sit there and go, well, I hope nobody has a Ragavan, Winds of Rebuke, or anything that can mess up my top deck, you know, because it kind of messes up. And not only that, like, yeah, it could be right in my hand if I have Shorakai out, but it was always on the, it was the 101st card every time for me, to be quite honest.
Yeah, that's fair enough. The other one that I was curious about, and I'm going to go a little bit farther with this question. I'm curious about how viable you think Teleria West might be in this deck, because you're able to transmute for a zero drop. Looking at your list, I feel that the best targets for Teleria West transmute would be your Tabernacle and possibly your Jewel Lotus. So I guess like the actual question here is, how valuable are Tabernacle and or Jewel Lotus on an average game to you to make Teleria West maybe a consideration, maybe not a consideration?
They're just really nice. It's gravy, baby, if I have them. It's not like I don't need them to function. You know, it's not I have to sit there and, oh God, I didn't get my Tabernacle this game. I'm completely screwed over. Or I'm completely shut off. Or, you know, because there's other times that Tabernacle is just, it's a dead card sometimes because, oh, some other people are not playing creature-centric decks. So it's like, okay, well, now I just have effectively an enchantment that does nothing, even though it's a land. You know, if somebody has like an Urborg or a Yavimaya, that's great. That makes it so much better. But sometimes, like, I'm actually looking to draw into Tabernacle more often than I'd like to see it in my opening hand.
I was about to say, so what you're saying is that they're nice bonus cards to progress a game plan that you're already trying to work toward.
Absolutely. Like, Jeweled Lotus, I am ecstatic to see in my opening hand, because that's a turn one Shorakai. You know, but Tabernacle, I'm like, if I had Tabernacle and Jeweled Lotus, yeah, no, I would not be happy to have both of them in my hand at one time. Jeweled Lotus, I'm never disappointed to see, unless it's turn 10. You know, turn 5 plus, I'm like, alright, and Shorakai's on the field, I'm like, well, this kind of stinks. But the other bonus of Jeweled Lotus is, it's a zero-drop artifact that could start my Tide Spout chain.
The weird thing with the Jeweled Lotus as the primary target with the Teleria West is, if I remember correctly, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but the transmute on Teleria West is 3. So, like, if you're transmuting for Jeweled Lotus, you're already, like, 1 mana away from having the Shorakai anyways. So if you have, like, Teleria West for Jeweled Lotus, play the Jeweled Lotus, crack it, tap a mana, play the Shorakai, you probably could have already just played the Shorakai there. So, like, it's, like, kind of awkward in that sense. If it was, like, 2 or 1 for the transmute, I would probably be more of a fan of it myself. But like that's what's awkward.
Yeah, if it was actually like a functional ritual effect, that makes sense.
Correct. But you're really just like not you're still gonna have the Shorakai the next turn. It's It's somewhat of a consideration in the sense that it can get you something to start your Holebreaker horror chain, but again, like, you probably should already kind of be there at that point.
Yeah, it sounds like Tulare West is fetching you your plan B's and plan C's and not your plan A's.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they do. They more or less fetch me my ramp, which, go figure, we're blue-white, we're mana rock dependent. Like, it's an artifact-based deck. We need all the ramp we could get. One of the cards that actually is unique and I get to run it in Shorkai is Manifold Key, which lets me untap an artifact. And it also gives me the opportunity to make a creature unblockable this turn, which could be used to make deals with the table, to be quite honest. Because you're like, hey, I need you to get in with that, you know, whatever, to deal damage to this person. So the Ragavan, to get rid of their top deck tutor that they did, I'm going to make it unblockable for you. But also, it just, hey, my mana vault's tapped. I want to generate five mana this turn. Cool. You know, you just tap mana vault, tap mana vault key, untap, do your thing. You know, it's a great ramp piece in this set, in this option.
It also untap Shorakai, so you can keep looting.
Yeah, I mean, that I thought that was maybe an understanding, but yeah, no. It lets me untap Shorakai. Moving on to kind of like the silver bullets that we have here, and some unique cards for Shorakai is, so I mentioned always having a fear. This fear is Null Rod. Well, the other fears are Curse Totem, in my opinion, Curse Totem effects, Torpor of effects, anything of the sort like that, that stop people from doing their game plan or progressing their game plan, like Grafdigger's Cage kind of hurts me, but, you know, that's besides the point. But this deck gets to run all of those. So I get to run Curse Totem, and I don't care. It doesn't bother me, because even Dermotaxi, it's an artifact. You know, Torp Orb, I have no ETB creatures. Great. Unwinding Clock is phenomenal, because it's on the same level of Manifold Key. I get to untap Shorakai and progress my board state and make moves and have protection up. It's like having a Seedboard Muse, but just for artifacts. Imposter Mech, I mentioned before. How powerful that could be, and Dermotaxi, because it's a unique strategy, because it's also it's a graveyard. It's not just my graveyard. So if somebody has something really interesting in their graveyard that I want, I just go, yeah, I'm going to take that. That's imprinted under Dermotaxi.
Yeah, there are some definite silver bullets in here. I really like Unwinding Clock. Like we talked about earlier, like having access to untap and do that again, having that ability to have a Seedborn Muse for your artifacts is pretty great. I mean, being able to, you know, effectively draw, what, 2, 4, 6, 8 cards in a turn cycle. Never a bad moment there to be. And then having to be, like we said, being more of a control deck and a reactive deck to stuff, having the mana on each turn to do that's pretty strong in and of itself there to kind of go through those motions. He who spends more mana and plays more cards usually ends up winning the game, so...
Yeah, so cards like Unwinding Clock and Manifold Key to let me draw more cards and spend my mana more efficiently lets me play more cards, which usually leads to me winning the game more often. So, guys, what do you guys think? I know this has been like my brainchild for a while. I know I've asked you guys multiple times. What do you guys think? What are your thoughts on it? You heard my thoughts. What about me? What about you guys? Not me.
So I like your initial takes on Shorakai. I think that you're kind of like, I mean, you're leading this discussion because you're the pioneer on it, I think, more than the other two of us. I like a lot of the avenues that you've explored. And I feel like if this is a deck that I built and shuffled up tomorrow in a tournament, I might want to lean more into the... I guess either one or the other, like either the polymorph aspect or the stacks aspect of the deck. And I'm honestly leaning toward the polymorph aspect. I feel that this is an excellent polymorph deck, especially being in blue white. I feel that you can tutor up your polymorph very effectively. I just want to lean harder into the polymorph, I'll be honest, because even if you aren't doing a fast combo, I really appreciate the extra additional value of Shorakai. Obviously, you get to draw 2, discard 1. You get to constantly be churning your hand as well as going +1 on card advantage every time you activate. But also, you're getting a chump blocker that if you go unopposed for a turn cycle, you can potentially be in contention for having a commanding board position especially if there's like a something like an Aegila in your pod or a Timna in your pod, that only has two toughness. You just make two tokens and you have a safe board position to go with your other angles. So I personally like getting a bit leaner on the combo train. I still like the board wipes. I still like a lot of your counter magic. And I think I would go harder into the polymorph lines if possible.
How so? Like, what would you add?
I mean, I'm a big fan of Personal Tutor. Cards like that, I think, are a good option. And what do we have? Like, is Tezzeret in the deck right now? Yeah, it is, right?
Yeah, Tezzeret's in the deck.
Yeah, so I mean, more ways, if there are more ways to fetch up an Iso Scepter, or if there are more ways to fetch up an Iso Scepter or a Proteus Staff, I feel that that could be worth considering. Other ways of getting a Polymorph out. I just think that you have a lot of defense, and I feel that you have the freedom to put a few cards into the offensive category, just shift a few over, make it a little bit more aggressive, just because if you're in a more aggressive pod, sometimes you can't afford to set up your stacks pieces. And in those situations, you'll be happy that you have some more options to kind of put your foot on the gas when you need to. That's just my personal preference. That's my personal play style. I like that flexibility. It's not for everyone, but that's definitely my take.
Yeah, and that's completely viable. Like, I did try the more lean in heavily into Polymorph with cards like Long-Term Plans, Another Tutor. I even tried Drift of Phantasms at one point to tutor up the Proteus Staff a lot easier. I personally, my playstyle, again, I like to play the long game. I'm a stacks player at heart. I love to play control, and this gets to fill all of those roles. And me taking the long game and taking, you know, I'm going to use you in the general sense, taking you out of the your game plan of comboing out turn 1, 2, 3, and me going, no, we're going to play at my pace, and we're going to play until turn 6, turn 7. It completely messes with that player's mental, which this is a mental game at the end of the day. And I'd rather mess with their mental and break their, you know, normal, okay, yep, cool, the old Flash Hulk, I win, please play it out, and they don't know how to play it out type adage thing. You know, that's, I'd rather do that than go for the speed.
I thought you were just going to say break their wills. I'm like, all right, calm down.
I mean, yeah, I'm not running Will Breaker because it's a polymorph deck, but, you know, that'd be something I would do.
I guess for me, I kind of look, when I look at the deck, I kind of have two different avenues I want to take it. To piggyback off of why, I do like kind of going more in on the combo. I do like adding things like, you know, Personal Tutor to get it to the top of the deck. I actually like, since you can't play creatures, like an effect I would really like on a combo turn would be something like a Grand Abolisher. So I was really interested in like the little Teferi, Time Raveler, because it gives you that level of like, all right, shut up, it's my turn, no one can do anything on my combo turn, to, you know, kind of guarantee that polymorph happens there, in interesting lines and into that place. So I would look to probably cut some of the fluff and just go a little harder in trying to set up the poly tyrant line, was this one way. But in order to be a little different, another line that I'm interested in is, this is a very low to the ground two color deck, and you have lands like Tabernacle that doesn't even tap for mana or do anything. So I would be really interested in transitioning into more of a control deck. I still don't like stacks, but back to basics lines and are really interesting to me. Being able to effectively shut off people's mana as well to continue to expedite, because again, most of your mana is coming from your mana rocks anyways. So just being able to take out another person's mana, sort of combat the null rod effects in the collector use, right? If someone's going to slam those, well then slam a back to basics and tell them to shut up too for a while. If they're in a multicolor deck, that is. And then something like a Narset to prevent people from trying to continue to dig. Because, you know, if you have a Narset in play and can protect it with your pilots, well, you're drawing, again, you know, upwards of at least 5-ish cards in a given turn cycle sometimes, 4 or something like that. and then they're restricted to one, so you have a much easier time of kind of using your one for one removal or your two for ones from your board wipes to just continue to just overwhelm the table with advantage. I think that would be an interesting way to kind of shift the deck a little bit differently if you wanted to adjust to that level of play style there, where you can just kind of shut the door. Plus, like I said, obviously is a great cantrip to help dig for stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I that is something I definitely considered when I was building it. I ran through it multiple times. I mean, I had so many different iterations. I mean, if you look at my sideboard and my considering pile, it's silly how many cards that have been gone in and out of this deck. I originally started with the full-on hard stacks deck, and I was like, this just doesn't feel right. It just didn't do enough as a straight stacks deck. And that's when I ended up settling on the fast combo, or I'm sorry, the polymorph train. And that let me play a lot different. One of the notable excludes that some people like to see in this type of one, I've noticed in a couple other decks that we're going to mention next, is like Skull Clamp and stuff like that. And I didn't like it. I mean, yeah, it got let me use my pilots to draw two cards off them, but I would just rather have my pilots as blockers because Timnas are a thing, Najeelas are a thing, and like Y said, they only have two toughness, and pilots have one power. You get two of them, they ain't attacking you. Not at all.
Yeah, that's just me, though. That says one mana, draw two cards. I'm all in for that every single day. I wouldn't pass that up. I would 100% be on Skullclamp, but I understand the reasons why.
I feel like Skullclamp is like the Thrasios parallel, and you were very more on the kind of like the control plan, not really the mid-range plan, just as a whole cork. It definitely, your list plays to your preferences very much. And I feel like if you're transitioning from a Thrasios-based value deck or a Timna-based value deck, then the Skullclamp inclusion makes more sense for you.
Absolutely. So there's a couple deck lists. This deck still hasn't been put on the main database. It's still in the Brewer's Corner. And I kind of looked at them. You know, this was I built this before they were on there, not to be like hipster me, but they just recently came onto the Brewer's Corner in the last update, I believe. They haven't been made to the main one yet, but I did, you know, Moxiel has that wonderful compare feature, and I was able to compare, and I'm about 20-some-odd cards off of the two that are on the database. And a lot of them are personal preferences versus, you know, what's in there. And two of them that are also in there are running the one of them is only running one Tyrant, and a lot of it has to do with lands, which is odd, you know. Some of them are running the flip lands and more basics, running a Windfall, for instance. Kind of unique, and I mean, these are definitely things that I consider. One of the ones that I saw in the Get in the Eva Shinji deck list by Kazu and Whimsy is one of my favorite cards out of time. I just love the idea of that card. I tried it, and that was when I had a bunch of board wipes. Would I play it over Vanquish the Horde? Maybe. I like Vanquish the Horde because it just deals with the threats, whereas Out of Time kind of just temporarily does it. But the cool thing about Out of Time is it phases them out. So that's slightly more important at a certain sense, at a certain level, I should say. Because Vanquish the Horde lets you put your Najeela or your Timna back in your command zone. Out of Time just says, they're just staying here. But enough of me talking. What do we say for some sample hands? Let's get into the nitty-gritty of this, huh?
Sure, let's dig in. Let's see what kind of hands and see how your mulligan decisions will affect kind of how this deck plays out. So the first hand we have here going is we have Swamp Song, Arid Mesa, An Offer You Cannot Refuse, Command Tower, Spire of Industry, Torpor Orb, and an Urza's Saga.
So right away, I don't like this hand. I don't have any fast mana, number one. I do have stuff to do on each turn. Turn one, I could leave a Valfur or Swan Song. Turn two, I could play Torpor Orb. Obviously, turn one play would be the Urza's Saga, so that on turn three, I could easily get a Mana Crypt, a Soul Ring, which you want to get the Soul Ring. But it also depends on table position and who I'm facing is, because this deck really wants to mulligan aggressively depending on who you're playing. But I would, like, first glance, I saw it, I looked, I went, nah, ship it.
Yeah, I feel like if you have room to breathe in your pod, then maybe you keep this, because you have an Urza Saga that lets you get some guaranteed value that's uncounterable, maybe get a token out of it. But yeah, I think in most pods, I agree with the mulligan.
Yeah, it's close, right? Because you do get that guarantee of the turn three short guy, but that's a little slow for me. So I would probably ship. Let's see what we get next. So going down to second seven, we have Torpor Orb again, Resculpt, Basic Planes, Minamo, Swan Song, Chromux, and Gemstone Caverns. So since we have a Gemstone Caverns in our hand, let's talk about this both going first as well as going later on in the pod.
So going first, this is a ship. Going anything other than first, I'd keep this. Reasons I'd keep this is it's a turn two Shorkai, but it also is a turn one either Resculpt or Torpor Orb, depending again on what you're facing. And you get to leap up, you know, something like Swan Song for backup or, you know, anything like that.
So since this is a complex hand, walk me through, you're going second. What are you pitching to Gemstone? What are you pitching to Chromux?
So right away, since I know that... All right, so can we get a draw then?
No.
No? All right, cool. So that's perfectly fine. So turn one, 100%, I would play Gemstone. First pitch would be actually Swan Song. And I'd play the Minamo and leave up Resculpt. Or leave, you know, I'd leave up Resculpt. I actually wouldn't play the Chrome Box.
So you're banning Swan Song. Yeah. So you're Gemstone Plains Pass, or are you playing the Chrome Box?
I wouldn't play the Chrome Box. I would wait on the Chrome Box, yeah.
Neat. Why? What about you?
I like the idea of Gemstone pitching. Potentially Resculpt. I think that's pod dependent. If you're seeing a fast combo, maybe you pitch the Resculpt and keep Swan Song. If you're expecting a lot of mid-range creature like a Chrom deck, maybe you pitch the Swan Song, keep Resculpt. I do like the idea of a turn one Torpor Orb, but I could also see merit to, well, you're getting the turn one Torpor Orb anyway, right? Because you're doing Gemstone Caverns plus land drop. And I feel that you don't necessarily have to do Chromox on turn one. Depending on what your first draw step is, maybe you wait to your second draw step into your Shorokai turn to see what you're pitching to Chromox and see how that develops.
Yeah, that's my thought. So, and I'm going to let you a little insight from me playing it. Resculpt has been one of the most important interaction / removal pieces that I have ever had in this deck, because it's able to get rid of artifacts or creatures. That's why I prioritized, when I was talking about pitching the Swan Song to the Gemstone Caverns, that's why I said that instead of the Resculpt.
You mentioned at the very beginning of the episode, one of your greatest fears is a Collector Oof effect or a Null Rot effect. Resculpt definitely answers both of those things. So I feel like if you're expecting either of those, you hold on to the Resculpt for dear life.
Literally dear life.
Sounds like that's a good second seven. All right. On the draw, not the play. The play, this is an easy pitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Play, and this is definitely ship it back.
All right. Let's do a next seven. Fresh seven, boys and girls. This one is Windswept Heath, Tundra, Imposter Mech, Polymorph, Silence, Island, and a Mox Opal.
So I really wanted this to be good. I saw the first three cards, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I love it. And I saw Polymorph, like, we're getting there. Silence, ooh, baby, getting closer. And then Island Mox Opal, and I'm like, never mind. It does nothing. It literally doesn't do anything. If that Mox Opal was a Mana Crypt, absolutely. If that Mox Opal was a Soul Ring, absolutely. Anything that got me two mana there, if that was a Jeweled Lotus, I'd probably keep it too.
A potential question here. Are there any commanders off the top of your head that would let you keep this hand, seeing that you have an Imposter Mech in hand? Are there any known creatures that you might keep this hand based off of?
If I'm thinking just commanders and only commanders...
Yeah, like guaranteed cards, I guess I could say.
like Thrasios is nice with Imposter Mech. Seedborn Muse is amazing with Imposter Mech.
It's not a commander.
That's what I mean. It's not a commander. I'm more looking for the cards in their deck or potentially in their deck than I am the actual commanders. Like if there was one commander, it'd be actually no, that's a lie. There are two commanders that I could think of off the top of my head.
Krom?
Nope. I actually don't really. Krom's meh for me.
Like, that's fair.
Prosper, Combound, and Thrasios are probably the two that I would be like, okay, Krom's up there, like it's good. I'd actually put out the same level of Thrasios. Like, if I see a Prosper, I'm all about that because getting to generate a mana and getting an extra card draw effect is phenomenal. But either way, this is in my personal opinion, this is definitely a pinch.
Yeah, not quite there. That makes sense.
I don't like this hand at all. This is worse than the hand with the Ears of Saga, and that one was bad. All right, next seven. Second seven. This one's crap. Maybe not. I didn't see the other line. Unwinding Clock, Dovin's Veto, Misty Rainforest, Cyclonic Rift, Academy Runes, Force of Will, and Teferi, Master of Time.
Your assessment was correct. This is crap.
It is crap. I only saw the Academy Runes at first, and I was like, oh yeah, this hand's garbage. But then I was like, oh, there's a Misty in here. Maybe not, but no, it's bad.
Yeah, 100% shipping back. There's not a world where I keep this.
Let's go to six. Dovin's Veto, Supreme Verdict, Polluted Delta, Flusterstorm, Academy Runes, Swan Song, and Vanquish the Horde. Whoa, five's looking great.
Yeah, if that Academy Runes was either another fetch land or anything, I'd consider it, depending on my pod, because of having the Flusterstorm and the Swan Song and the Veto and the Vanquish the Horde.
If it was like a fetch land, yeah, because then you can go like turn one, keep up the Swan Song, turn two, Dovin's Veto, turn three, like potentially have Vanquish the Horde at the ready. But like, ooh.
Yeah, 100%.
I feel like if there's a Najeela or two Mana Dork decks in your pod, the Vanquish the Horde makes this very possibly enticing, but that's a very specific situation.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Down to five. We might be really mulliganing here today, everybody. Angel's Grace, Talisman of Progress, Winds of Rebuke, Intuition, The Tabernacle at Pendril Vale, Spire of Industry, and Dovin's Veto. So before we get Cork's thoughts on this, the interesting note is technically a one-land hand, but we are in five, so I'm curious to see if Tabernacle sways his opinion on having that dependent, obviously pod dependent, but sways his decision making there.
Nope, because Tabernacle would be one. If I was to keep this hand, Tabernacle would be one of the cards I put back. This card is a big no for me.
All right, we're going down all the way to four. All right, on four we have Swan Song, Dress Down, Time Twister, Mox Diamond, Urza's Saga, Proteus Staff, and an offer you can't refuse. What's hilarious, listeners, is in typical Cork fashion, he doesn't play lands in his deck.
Naturally, and I'm actually running 30 in this list.
You gonna keep a one land Mox Diamond hand on four?
Actually, this hand has the best possible option of doing something. I know that sounds weird, but hear me out.
Trying to jam the Twister?
Correct. You literally
just talk about Mox Diamond Twister hold keep offer of trying to do something.
Exactly. Like my keepable four is I'd actually probably keep this hand in all honesty. It'd be Urza's Saga, Mox Diamond, Time Twister, and an offer you can't risk.
Sucks is if the saga was blue, you could you can't. Never mind.
I was thinking the same thing you're thinking, Cypher, in that if you have a blue land, you can counter your Mox Diamond for two treasures.
Yep. If that saga was blue, you could turn one Twister with his hand. That's neat. But yeah, it's just that was my first thought. I'm like, how do I get Twister Man? I'm like, ooh, offer does it. And I'm like, oh crap, the diamond. No.
But it's still a turn two Twister, but yeah.
Maybe.
Well, yeah. No. I mean, like, if in your thought process, like, because if the Ears of Saga was blue, if it was an island, you know, you cast the Mox Diamond, you offer it.
Yeah, no, I get it. Like I said, I was just trying to think of it. I was trying to blitz it. But yeah, there's a way there to get, but yeah. Nope.
Yeah, Urza Saga is a nice door opener. I mean, considering the fact that you're on, what, a four-card opener on this, I think Urza Saga gives you an ability to actually play the game.
Yeah, that's the whole reason, honestly.
I would absolutely keep this as well, by the way. I'm actually torn between... I'm definitely keeping Twister Diamond and Saga. I'm debating that if I want Offer or Swan Song. Dress down's enticing as well, but I probably would just keep the offer because I kind of want the mana then at some point. So yeah, it's probably offer.
Yeah, no, it's offer because it's a non-creature counterspell, period. No, there's no conditions, not like Swan Song with an enchantment, instant, or sorcery. Like, so if there's an artifact, if someone jams a Null Rod and I have a Swan Song, I go, well, I'm just completely screwed out of this game. But if someone jams a Null Rod with an offer, I go, yeah, all right, you can have your two treasures.
In this hand, I'm legitimately looking at it as a ritual, right? I want to draw a blue pip. I want to cast the blue pip. I want to play the Mox Diamond to counter it and get my Twister going.
Exactly. That's start over.
Plan. All right. Let's do one or two more here. This hand, we found the lands. We have a Mana Vault, a Seagate Restoration, Academy Runes, Island, Dramatic Reversal, Ancient Tomb, and Unwinding Clock.
Is this a keep Seagate Restoration hand or a cast Seagate Restoration hand?
Possibly. So this is this is a turn one Unwinding Clock, which I actually really like because it involves a Mana Vault, which means that depending on what my next couple of draws are, I can easily cast Shorakai.
I don't know. I'm not into this hand at all. It's got one blue pip. Ball. I guess it's got two technically if you're playing the Seagate Restoration, but like,
yeah,
your hand's not doing anything besides playing a Mana Vault, and you can't even guarantee the cast of Shorakai.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing. Again, it's like, it's fringe. It's so close.
So I will audible to you, Cork. Is this a keep, or is this a second seven?
Knowing my way I play, I'd keep it.
You're ridiculous.
It's that low floor, high ceiling option that you love.
Exactly.
I'm gonna break my golden rule. You drew a curse at him.
Oh yeah.
Supreme verdict. Your hand does nothing.
No, it does nothing. It just play a curse totem.
Just wanted to point that out. The hand does nothing. Anyway.
That's fine.
This one we have, so this would be a fresh seven because we kept that god awful hand. This one would be War of Invention, Attakar Wastes, Island, Talisman of Progress, Tide Spout Tyrant, Sensei's Divining Top, and an Arid Mesa. So effectively a mold of six because we have Tyrant in our hand.
Yeah, I'd probably pitch this one. I mean, I get to play turn one top, turn two Talisman, but I don't get to take full effect of the top until at least turn three, turn four.
It's a very fair opening hand.
Yeah, it's definitely, if I'm playing fair and balanced Magic, this is a great hand. Because I also have enough to cast War of Invention as well.
It's another weird hand where you're not, like, doing a lot. Like, you're going, what, turn one top, turn two Talisman, turn three Shorakai, and then, like, turn four is like, all right, now I'm ready to start playing Magic, right? Like, I used four turns to develop. I don't know if I want to be doing that in CDH. I'm going second seven here.
Agreed.
Next seven, we have Arzurius Signet, a Mox Opal, a Dermo Taxi, a Mana Drain, a Command Tower, and an Inventor's Fair. And thank God it's there, Basic Island.
Yeah. I'd 100% keep this one.
Because I paused there because I looked and I was like, oh God, there's no double blue. This is crap. Now it's a little better.
Yeah, no, this is one I would keep. It's a turn two Arzurius Signet, turn three Shorakai, which puts Mox Opal online, which means I can activate Shorakai pretty easily.
What I like is you can pivot depending on the board, and you can hold up the Mana Drain and then get an explosion of mana through that as well, too, which would let you double spell onto, like, Signet, Opal, Shorakai kind of in, like, one turn, which is kind of cool, too.
So. Yeah, and what's also funny is that if I, for some reason, you know, I hold in Dermo Taxi in my hand, and if I happen to just draw naturally a Tyrant effect, I could ditch it to Shorakai and start my changes naturally with Dermo Taxi.
I was going to say that this is in some ways also a hand of six by nature of being a Dermo Taxi in hand, same as having a Tide Spout Tyrant in your opener. So, you know, given the first seven cards you're seeing, this is probably the first card you might want to pitch to Shorakai activation. But if you do hit something along the way, one of your Tyrants, you have that really quick option. You also have an option of possibly mana draining an opponent's creature and then Dermo Taxiing that, right?
Yeah, I like this. I like this on. I think this is a solid six. Is to Wise's point exactly. I mean, it's got an interaction piece. It's got some fast mana going on. decently fast mana, I guess. But overall, I'm okay with this. This is our second seven, so I think I'm okay with that stopping.
Yeah, it's a comfortably keepable six, and then slightly more comfortably keepable seven.
All right, let's do one more since y'all disagreed with my one that I kept.
I don't know why I did. I'm assuming he did. I definitely did. I was like, you were insane. And I was point proven in the draws.
I want to roll the dice, baby.
This is not good, in my opinion. This is a Muddle the Mixture, Academy Runes, Whir of Invention, Copy Artifact, Manifold Key, Mana Vault, and Savine's Reclamation. I'm going to ask a question, Cork. Have you heard of blue and white mana?
I was about to say, how many Academy Runes are in this deck?
There's five, actually. I'm cheating. No, this is, even though I could generate five mana every time, which is cool and all, every turn, nah, I'll pass.
Hey, once you start discarding the hand size, you can get your artifacts back maybe if you ever get a blue pip.
I sure could.
All right, second seven. Oh my god, we might have a keeper, boys. Maybe not. I don't know. This one is a Plains, a Mystic Remora, a Flooded Strand, a Mana Crypt, a Mystic Sanctuary, a Mana Vault, and a City of Brass. So I'm going to ask the question on this one. You have a lot of mana and a fish. Are you comfortable with that?
100%. This is a turn two Shorokai and still leaving fish up.
Yep, this is a good one.
Yeah, no, 100%. I don't care what position I'm in. I'm keeping this every time.
Yeah, and Shorokai helps you, like we were saying before, Shorokai helps you sculpt your hand, and an early Shorokai, that'll get rid of those excess lands, no problem.
So here's a question I wanted to ask, since this is turn one, are you on Hold Sanctuary for as long as humanly possible, or are you kind of, like, trying to slam that quickly and get it untapped? Is there a lot of value in that, or is it just kind of a card? Like, is that a card that I should be like play everything else but the sanctuary first, or is that something that like I can slam? Like, let's say like the vault or the fish wasn't in the hand. Is it something you're slamming, or are you holding onto that sanctuary?
I have no problem slamming it if I need to. It's neat. It's valuable. It's great. Like in this hand, it turn one literally looks in my vision that the turn one looks like this: Flooded Strand for Tundra, Mana Crypt, Tap Crypt for Mana Vault, cast fish with the Tundra, pass the turn. Turn two rolls around, use the Crypt to pay for the fish, and then you play your Plains, you tap Mana Vault, and the two lands, cast Shorokai, use the one floating for the Mana Vault to activate Shorokai. I've just gone five cards deep, four cards deep.
And at this point, maybe you just discard the Mystic Sanctuary.
Exactly.
Correct. Yeah, I just wanted to ask the question, since it came up in the deck, as to how important that card was in the deck. And yeah, it's just a value card, right? Gets back counter spells, gets back stuff, but it's not like it is in like something like a Tatiova deck where it's like a critical combo piece.
Yeah, no, it's not like it's just an extra value card, in all honesty.
All right. So those are some of the hands. I hope those give you guys some insights as to kind of what you're looking for in the deck. Obviously fast mana, right? Getting Shorokai out early, and then having some control elements, and play less Academy runes and more islands and planes in your deck list.
Yeah, absolutely. Five Academy runes is, I found out, too much for the deck. Yeah.
But yeah, Quark, I think that your deck building decisions are some really heads up analysis on what everything in the meta is trying to do right now. I think that Shorokai responds well to a lot of common things that we've been seeing a lot, especially the fact that I think creature decks feel a little bit too safe right now for some people, and Shorokai is there for that reality check that I think the meta might desperately need, depending on what your local meta might have. So yeah, I just really appreciate that we're talking about Shorokai today, because I think it does something that a lot of decks are not right now.
Thanks. It was labor of love, and ever since, like, Derevi and Korholm, like, I haven't really found like a deck that I've vibed with as much as Shorokai. But yeah, link is going to be in the description. Feel free, give it a test, play some, you know, locals, you know, do whatever you want to with it. You make changes, feel free, reach out to any one of us. We'll definitely take a look, but we'll give you the feedback on what we like about that change, why we don't like that change. Coming up in the new set, there's not really many cards that I see that I want to add from it to be quite honest, which the new set coming out is the Baldur's Gate one. New Capena had, you know, I would love to put Ledger Shredder in there, but it had an offer you can't refuse, and that was pretty much the only card I wanted in there. Otherwise, it's, you know, I like the cards where I'm at.
Yeah, new strong baseline, plenty to build off of as new cards come out.
Just as a spoiler, as a word of warning or caution, anybody who plays this deck, if you play it at the table, you will become that guy. So if you really want to be that guy, go ahead and play this deck and prepare to make people not happy with you as you prevent them from playing Magic.
Oh, 100%. And the other thing that you got to watch out for, one of the biggest things, is people are going to look at you and go, oh, you're playing blue-white, you have all the counter spells. Sometimes you don't. And sometimes you got to be like, no, I really don't.
Sometimes you have like a Swords to Plowshares and they're trying to like reach combo.
Yeah.
Sometimes your hand's a whole bunch of colored pips and you have an Academy Runes in play, so.
Oof.
Hey, sometimes you're the hot dog and sometimes you're the bun.
Anyways, guys, that's another episode of Commander and Coffee. We are done with the deck tech and we are all out of coffee, so.
Until next time, keep on brewing.